Let's go straight to the phones here, and let's talk with CBS correspondent Steve Dorsey. He is live in New Hampshire. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So what is the latest up there? I guess we've got votes in from, what is it, Dixville Notch and Hart's location. Who's got the early lead?
Well, Dixville Notch has probably been most famous for its midnight vote for some time now. There's just five people who voted at midnight there, and the winner, Michael Bloomberg. Three people voted for him as a write-in candidate. One of those is a Republican. The problem, he didn't file in New Hampshire, and he's not qualified to be on the ballot in New Hampshire.
Let me ask you, after the debacle of the caucuses in Iowa, we sort of thought everybody's kind of getting a pass. We expect New Hampshire to really winnow down the field generally. But is it possible that won't be the case this year, that kind of everybody's going to get a pass till South Carolina?
Yeah, it's possible. This could be not only something we wait for until we get to South Carolina, but beyond that, a lot of these candidates, including Joe Biden, Tom Steyer, are counting on South Carolina to turn their campaigns around. Here in New Hampshire, polls show that Bernie Sanders leads. Pete Buttigieg is right behind him. Both of those two candidates are coming off momentum from Iowa, but you know, the results are in such dispute in Iowa, and including the process, that really no campaign has celebrated any kind of performance there.
And, you know, Joe Biden was sort of the hope of the moderate sort of establishment of the Democratic Party. He had a really tough time in Iowa. It doesn't look like he's going to do well in New Hampshire. Can he survive anything other than a first-place finish in South Carolina?
I don't think so. However, he is leading in polls in South Carolina, mainly because he says he's been able to connect with black voters there. Tom Steyer has also been targeting black voters. In fact, he's been completely missing over the last couple days from the campaign trail in New Hampshire, focused instead on South Carolina, apparently cutting his losses here. So that's going to be a key test, perhaps the last firewall, last stand for Joe Biden's campaign in South Carolina, and a test of his viability as a candidate for president.
And you mentioned Michael Bloomberg and not being registered in New Hampshire. He really skipped Iowa. And he spent, I think it's all coming up on $300 million on TV internet ads. Is there a chance that that's a winning strategy now, and you can maybe ignore the first couple of primaries?
Well, listen, you still see Bloomberg ads here on TV, on Boston TV, piped in from Massachusetts. He's been criticized for his big ad buys by other campaigns, including Elizabeth Warren's. She said that billionaires shouldn't be able to buy their way into the White House. But it's a campaign strategy that fits into his effort to focus on March 3rd Super Tuesday states. That's going to be his first, I think, significant showing in this campaign, and he could start making Democrats very nervous who are competing against him.
And one last question, as you've talked to voters in New Hampshire, what is the most important thing on their minds? Is it beating President Trump? Is it the environment, the economy?
Healthcare is something that folks are talking about here. And we saw that in the debate, with Democrats arguing over how much their proposed plans cost and how feasible they are in getting them through Congress. But also, as you said, the ability of a Democrat to defeat President Trump and unite the party. And we've seen Joe Biden use that as an attack line against a leading candidate, Bernie Sanders, saying he's too divisive, too radical to do what Democrats need done.
All right, CBS News correspondent Steve Dorsey live in New Hampshire. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Have a great morning.
You too. So there you have it. Yes, there's three places, I think it is now. I'd never heard of the last one before, but it's Dixville Notch, where they only barely have enough voters actually to have a primary. You've got to have five, and they were down to four. They had to convince a guy to move there a few months ago so they could still have their first in the state primary. And then you've got like Hart's location, and then it's Millsfield. And as of right now, on the Republican side, President Trump is running away with it. No great shock. And on the Democratic side, as Steve said there, Mike Bloomberg with the write-in votes, but he's not registered. And it is Amy Klobuchar with the early lead. Got 40% of the vote. But by the same token, 40% of the vote, it's out of like 20 people.
Yeah.
So don't get terribly excited.
I heard a stupid term yesterday. I was listening to Markley Van Camp and Robbins yesterday, and she said something about it being clomentum.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Like Klobuchar and momentum pushed together. Clomentum of her campaign.
That's lame.
It's really dumb. It triggered me a little bit yesterday.
She deserves
afternoon.
To lose just for that right there. If nothing else at all, that should be enough to put her away to where she would just have no chance at all. But so we'll have you'll be hearing about New Hampshire all day long on the news, and you shouldn't have to worry about any sort of Iowa problem, since this is a primary and not the silly sort of caucus thing. So we should get reliable results this evening, and we'll review them in the morning. Let's get to one more report from New Hampshire, and CBS News correspondent Laura Podesta is in Manchester.
I think the stakes are so high.
In a state that can give candidates a national bounce, voter Catherine Talbert is looking for someone who can beat President Trump.
We really need to make a change.
She's split between Senators Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar.
Let's get this done.
But it's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders leading in the New Hampshire polls.
Let's transform America.
Sanders is trying to hold off Pete Buttigieg.
Don't listen to anybody who tells you got to choose one way with your heart or the other way with your head.
Man, Amy Klobuchar sounded an awful lot like Hillary Clinton there. That was kind of a bad flashback.
Scratchy and abrasive. That's the same sound that Hillary has.
Maybe that's just what campaigning does to your voice. Yeah, and Bernie Sanders just killing it in the fundraising, $25 million in January. So raking in the cash there, and you hardly say it enough. The Trump 2020 campaign would love to get a crack at Bernie Sanders, much more so than they'd like to run against Joe Biden. All right, let's look at some other news here. And more than 108 more people have died in China from the new coronavirus, raising the death toll in that country to at least 1,016. Almost 43,000 people have been confirmed infected. That's worldwide, including 13 people in the United States. In Geneva, the World Health Organization has convened a two-day meeting to discuss the outbreak. BBC News' Imogen Folks is there, where international health officials want to share what they know and don't know about the deadly virus.
It is urgent to find out exactly how the virus is transmitted from human to human, why it has spread so fast in China's Hubei province, but relatively slowly elsewhere. There are also questions about its severity. Why do some people develop serious lung infections and others escape with scarcely any symptoms at all?
It is a fair question, and yes, it does seem to be spreading much more quickly around Hubei. I mean, that's just because there's so many people there and so much more chance to spread it. Or if there's some, conditions specific to that area, climatic or something, I've obviously no idea. And I think that's basically true of just about everybody as of right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a mathematician or a scientist, but if you have one person could easily spread to three people in a certain area versus anywhere else, you have kind of sparse people being hit with the virus. So that's probably based on the spread there. But like you said, it is weird that some people get some symptoms and some don't. Maybe it's a chemistry thing. Who knows? But
yeah, it does seem to affect older people worse than younger people. And that may mean that their immune systems are a little weaker, something like that. But you have to remember, Wuhan at least was, by our standards, a huge city in China, kind of mid-size, about 11 million people. And so you've got people pretty densely packed in, so that you can spread the virus around. So
that, and not having any sort of cure, or we don't have like a vaccination or anything. So, I mean, hopefully it nips itself in the bud. Maybe they can find some kind of cure or something.
Yeah, there is some hope that it started to stabilize, but I don't know whether that is reasonable or not. All right, so let's get into a story we haven't talked about for a while. Newly released documents show an elaborate list of bogus athletic glories used to get the daughter of TV star Lori Loughlin into a prestigious college, but it's USC. So, but nonetheless, CBS's Carter Evans is in Los Angeles.
The bogus document details an elaborate list of rowing accomplishments for someone who never rowed competitively, including gold medals and top 15 finishes in the head of the Charles Regatta in Boston, one of rowing's most prestigious events.
It shows how big their deception was. This resume is the smoking gun.
All the achievements could have been easily checked out, but USC's associate athletic director at the time, Donna Heinel, is accused of being in on the scam.
So, yeah, she won gold, silver, and bronze medals in all these competitions, did great in these team events, all this sort of stuff, and never so much as ever put an oar in the water.
That's always what I've wondered, is like all of a sudden you just decide, I want to be a rower, Mom. Let me just pay for me to be a rower and do all this shady stuff just to get me there to do rowing of
well, I think once you were in, you were pretty much off the hook for that sort of stuff. That's my understanding of it, is that at least I'm presuming it's the same at USC that it was at other places. Was that like once you got in as a soccer player or tennis player or what have you, you know, you were sort of a prospect. It's not that you were getting a scholarship and were expected to play. It just helped you get into the school. And I guess it's like being, well, this kid might be a walk-on for the football team, but if he doesn't make it, you know, who cares? And I think that's a lot of how it went. Although you do wonder how much their daughter knew about this whole thing. Apparently some of the kids knew about this stuff and some didn't. Although there was one of the other kids who got into USC as a rower. They actually like put him in a boat in a pool and had him pose for pictures for his application. So, you know, that kid obviously knew what was going on. But yeah, I expect that Lori Loughlin and Mr. Loughlin, Massimiliano something or other, probably wish they'd taken the guilty plea right off the bat. Yeah. At this point,
I mean, that's been beaten to death too. You know, we saw what happened with Felicity Huffman. She immediately said, I'm sorry. You could tell she very much felt bad. She's served her time now. She's not seen as, I mean, there's jokes, of course. There's going to jokes always. But she's not quite seen in the same light as Lori. When I look at Lori, I'm just thinking, man, you're just curse words. I'm thinking curse words when I look at Lori Loughlin. Now I'm thinking, like you said, if she had just apologized and said, I'm sorry, I messed up, and then served her time, maybe she'd be in a different spot right now.
Yeah, she's probably going to be a guest of Uncle Sam for a while. Now, coming up on the program today, a weird car crash story to tell you about from Halifax. A couple of people found dead but did not die in the crash, apparently. Minority Leader in the House of Delegates Todd Gilbert will join us after the bottom of the hour break. We'll see where things stand at crossover in the General Assembly. Mike Mayo will be in to talk movies later. Parasite, your big winner at the Oscars, Best Picture. So we'll have that. And then also, you know, what does the Irishman getting shut out? 0-10, taking the collar there, does that bode ill for Netflix and their hopes for a Best Picture Oscars? Well, certainly did this year, no question. And Valentine's Day coming up on Friday. And in case maybe you are recently broken up, we'll have a story that will amuse you. Also, Burger King has a Valentine's Day promotion for you. I'm not making that up, really. Burger King has a big Valentine's Day promotion. And what percentage of people in the country would be willing to go into some level of credit card debt for a good Valentine's gift?
Wow.
Yes, too many is the answer to that question. So a story that first popped up over the weekend. There's a big crash on Route 58 near Halifax. You had a couple of people dead, and it has taken a decidedly more interesting turn, that is for sure.
Yeah, they're terming this now as a double homicide. And as you mentioned, police responded to a single vehicle crash on Route 58 in Halifax, where they found a 2009 Nissan Maxima in the median. And on the ground were the bodies of two people, who have now been identified as 21-year-old Ntombo Bianda of Alexandria and 19-year-old Ayanna Griffin of Germantown, Maryland. This happened early Saturday morning, and they're not saying what the cause of death was, but they are saying that there was not an accident. There was not a car accident.
Yeah, they didn't die as a result of the car running into the median or something like that. So you do wonder, you know, what happened. I mean, I take it that they were not killed there, but we don't really know that from the story. I'm just kind of assuming that from the story from WSET and from the Associated Press as well. And so, yeah, this they think this they called there just before 3 a.m. I think this happened sometime between 11 p.m. Friday and then as obviously 3 a.m. On Saturday morning.
Yeah, and they said this is a pretty isolated stretch of road. It's not a heavily trafficked area, but they are looking for people who might have been in the area and happen to see anything. And it is the Virginia State Police who are investigating this. Just weird. Double homicide, bodies in a median with a car nearby. And they haven't also mentioned if the car belongs to either one of these victims either.
No, and you've seen some of the pictures of this, and the car is, essentially perpendicular to the road in the median over into one side of 58. It's a divided highway there. And it's just, you just wonder what in the world is going on, because if this thing first popped up on Saturday, you think, oh, it's two people, car crash, they're ejected from the car, and they died, should have been in their seatbelts. But obviously, there's an awful lot more to the story than that. This will be very interesting to follow, presuming that they find something out about it. Because that's, the Washington Post version of it, just paints them as Washington area residents who died in Southern Virginia. And then, it takes this turn. And so, yes, you just can't help but wonder where this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty grim stuff, and maybe news hasn't reached that far as the Washington Post goes about this actually being a double homicide, but it will be interesting to learn the circumstances of the deaths, and just be careful out there. This is very strange. This could have easily been anybody else, I suppose, but
Well, that's the thing. You wonder, is it something that's random? Was there something specific about them? But we'll keep it on the story.